What happened? What were the facts of Neighbors? Well, a neighbor's truck hit the plaintiff's Suburban, and 8 people are ejected. Suburban rolled multiple times, and the defense wanted to introduce expert testimony that 7 of the 8 were not belted, and that's why they were ejected, and that's why they were killed and or seriously injured. And the trial court didn't allow the evidence to come in. And so the Texas Supreme Court went through a long analysis of the history. They talked about the Kirby case, the Carnation case, the 1985 statute, HB4 in 2003. They walked through the whole history of everything. And then they pointedly said that after Carnation was decided in 1974, a little statute called Chapter 33, codified in Chapter 33 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, namely that all people, parties who cause or contribute, quote, in any way to injury, in any way to injury, that's how Chapter 33 is worded, have to be on the line, have to be apportioned responsibility. And so they noted, the Texas Supreme Court Neighbors, that, quote, the legislature both intends and requires fact finders to consider relevant evidence of a plaintiff's pre-occurrence injury-causing conduct. Pre-occurrence injury-causing conduct. And by the way, the holder is much broader than for seatbelts. And so what about Kirby and Carnation? And so they wanted to get rid of that precedent. So in a wisp of a pen, if you will, they said, oh, those cases were embodiments of outdated common law doctrines that were designed to blunt the, quote, austerity of all or nothing common law contributory negligence schemes in effect at the time. So they basically said the Texas Supreme Court was making up stuff to keep the law from being too harsh. Back when, if you were even a little bit negligent, you could be precluded from recovering down at the courthouse. So that's how they rationalized Kirby and Carnation, and that's how they very quickly overruled Kirby and Carnation. So what was the holding of Neighbors? You're looking at it. Quote, relevant evidence of use or non-use of seatbelts and relevant evidence of a plaintiff's pre-occurrence injury-causing conduct generally is admissible for the purpose of apportioning responsibility. Now, here's law professor geek stuff. For the purpose of apportioning responsibility. Some people might say, well, that's a mitigation of damages theory. But technically it's not, because if you fail to mitigate your damages, that is not submitted. That is not admissible as an apportionment of your responsibility. If you fail to mitigate your damages, that only reduces your damages. The net effect may end up, and usually is, the same, but it's an important distinction, and I'll come back to that in a second. And even though the Texas Supreme Court and Neighbors noted that there is a, quote, logical distinction between occurrence-causing conduct and injury-causing conduct, they still held as they did. And many have argued since, and I think they're correct, that the Texas Supreme Court appears to have all but eliminated the distinction between occurrence-causing and injury-causing conduct in their Neighbors holding. And so, on the defense side, does this mean that in every case you have, in the wake of the Neighbors holding in 2015, evidence of seatbelts comes in automatically and necessarily? And the answer is absolutely not. And it's not simply because I say so as a plaintiff's attorney. It's because the Texas Supreme Court said so in their holding in Neighbors. They were very specific. They seemed to be very cognizant that this was going to be used as a blueprint to determine what comes in and what doesn't come in with respect to seatbelts. And so they said you've got to jump through 3 basic hurdles. You've got to establish the relevance by showing the non-use contributed to cause injuries. Well, whose burden is that in a typical car wreck? That's the defendant's. Second, the trial court must first scrutinize the relevance outside the presence of the jury. And then the third element is basically a Rule 403 element. The probative value has to exceed the prejudicial nature of the evidence. Now, what does that mean necessarily in every case that the defendant has to hire a mechanical expert? No, but the Texas Supreme Court said although expert testimony is not always going to be required, they said it's often going to be required. And I think that means that, you know, given the Daubert case law, how do you prove the non-wearing of a seatbelt, given the state of our case law, which is tightening, it seems, every year on the issue of expert testimony and evidence, how do you prove that caused injury without an expert and survive any level of scrutiny under the case law? I don't see how you can do it 99% of the time. And the Supremes basically tipped their hat and essentially said, more times than not, we're going to need to see an expert to establish that.